signed last year. We'll report on the results tomorrow across the country. Today at 1 p.m. Eastern, we will live stream the House Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol insurrection with its surprise hearing. That's 1 p.m. Eastern at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
And once again, if you're hearing this now, obviously 1 p.m. has already happened. You can find a summary of what took place today in the January 6th surprise hearings anywhere, really. But we'll talk about it in the next hour here on WUSB Stony Brook. Boy, what a surprise. It's just about 6 o'clock. It's time for a surprise edition of Off the Wall. Boo. We have to start a little bit early because we have so much to cover in this hour. It's Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yep.
Oh, boy. Okay, let's start. Let's start with what happened today, and then we'll move backwards into what was a most eventful week. Well, first of all, the story that should be the headline everywhere and is the headline nowhere is the fact that 51 migrants died in our country after being locked in the back of a truck. It's disgusting. It's horrendous. And, you know, us not talking about it, because ostensibly they're not U.S. citizens, so they don't matter as much. It's sickening to me. It really is. And the fact that the very first thing that the governor of Texas, Governor Abbott, that idiot, said was, this is Joe Biden's fault. The blood's on your hands. This is because of open borders. First of all, I'm struggling. All the words I want to use that I can't. It's okay. Sometimes you have to find cleaner ways of saying things. But you stupid person, if the borders were wide open, why would they all have been hiding inside a truck where they all died? If we had open borders, they would have just walked across the border. They wouldn't have felt the need for this. This is sickening. And this shows the problem is our hatred, our fear, our prejudice, where we literally make people behave like animals. For what? To come to our country and work. Literally to come here and help us, the people who already are here. And if that had been us, if we had been the people on the other side of the line, what might we have done? Would it have been something similar or identical? Would you have not wanted to make life better for your family? We're not talking about criminals here. We're not talking about people who are stealing or attacking, being violent. Although, you know, the right-wing media will try and make it that way. They'll try to paint every Latin American as if they're here for one purpose only, to, you know, to sell drugs and to murder us.
I don't think there were any drugs.
Yeah, because it's... Those are the hysterical stories that get fed out to the populace so that we react in a certain way and treat people with hostility when they're people just like us. And this is a horrendous tragedy. It should be what we're talking about nonstop today. 51 people dying in a truck in our country because of the way we treat people, because of the way that we make people afraid. Do we have a problem with refugees and migrants? I suppose so. But it's not nearly as much of a problem as it is to be a migrant or a refugee. And maybe we should look at that and what our role is in creating that kind of environment where people feel the need to flee to a place like this. And honestly, you know, if I were to give them advice, I'd say it's not as great a place as you might think. Maybe, you know, try Canada or something. Try a different place.
Shop around
a little bit before you make a decision. But seriously, 51, this is a very dark day. And, you know, 51 people died in an accident of some sort that were American citizens, the media would be all over it. But south of the border, who cares? Disgusting. All right. Not to get to the story today that everybody is talking about. Of course, we have more stories from the last few days that everybody's talking about. But today, it just happened. So it's really, oh boy. Yeah, there wasn't supposed to be a hearing today. There was not supposed to be a January 6th hearing. And they announced it yesterday, and I knew something was up. Something was happening when they said, we have some new evidence, some more testimony from somebody. So we're going to have a surprise hearing. And that surprise witness was Cassidy Hutchinson. She was a former aide to Trump White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. Remember him? Yeah. And she had quite a few things to reveal to the world today, particularly alarming testimony about Trump's angry, defiant, and vulgar actions while he ignored repeated warnings against summoning the mob to the Capitol and then refused to intervene to stop the deadly violence. Now, Cassidy Hutchinson was not that well known. She was, you know, a White House aide, but not one of the more familiar. I'd never heard her name before today. She rebuffed Trump's team's warnings against testifying. Yeah, you know you're on the right side when you're the people you're allied with are warning you not to tell the truth. Yeah, she ignored those warnings. And she provided firsthand knowledge of what she saw and heard in the run-up to the January 6th insurrection, proximity to power that gives stunning new details. She testified about a defiant Trump who knew there were guns and other weapons in the rally crowd at the White House, but sent his supporters to the Capitol anyway and tried, get this, tried unsuccessfully to physically pry the steering wheel from his presidential limousine driver so he could join them. Physically try to grab the steering wheel. That's when I put everything down. I was working on a lot of things, but I started hearing that kind of testimony. Nah, everything. I'm not going to do a good job at this. Let's just put this down. We'll get to it later. What in the world is going on? Before joining the White House, Hutchinson had worked in some of the most conservative Republican offices on Capitol Hill. She was hired as special assistant to the president and promoted up to Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows. Now, these are some of the highlights of the hearing. I do recommend people find a copy of this online and watch the whole thing yourself. Trump was angry and defiant on the morning of January 6th as he assessed the size of the crowd for his rally in front of the White House, upset that not everyone who had answered his summons to come to Washington could get in to see him because of the security lines. Well, who wouldn't be upset by that? She said that Trump said armed rally-goers were not there to hurt him, told that guns, knives, and other weapons were being confiscated from the security screenings. Trump didn't care. They're not here to hurt me. That's what he said. He wanted to take away the magnetometer stations to allow more people inside the grounds regardless of their weaponry. He wanted them to bring weapons in. Take the effing mags away, an agitated Trump barked at security moments before taking the stage. That's according to Hutchinson's recollection. Trump's lawyers at the White House were trying to tamp down the president's speech to the crowd he had summoned for his Stop the Steal rally on January 6th, and they were trying to stop his plans to go to the Capitol that day when Congress would be certifying the election results for Joe Biden's victory. Hutchinson testified that lawyer Eric Hirschman said it would be foolish to include some of the language the defeated president wanted to add to his speech. Comments like fighting for Trump or him telling the crowd, I'll be there with you. Hirschman warned such language shouldn't be included for legal concerns and because of the optics it would portray. That language, as we all know, ultimately stayed in the script as Trump rallied the crowd to fight like hell and promised he would join them at the Capitol. Days before January 6th, White House counsel Pat Cipollone suggested there were serious legal concerns if Trump went to the Capitol with the crowd. We need to make sure this doesn't happen, Hutchinson recalled Cipollone saying in the run-up to the rally. Now, the morning of January 6th, Cipollone restated his concerns that if Trump did go to the Capitol to intervene in the certification of the election, quote, we're going to get charged with every crime imaginable. Now, concerning what happened inside the limousine, which I believe she mistakenly referred to as the Beast. It actually wasn't the Beast. It was just an SUV. Trump inside the vehicle tried to pry the steering wheel away from the driver, demanding to be taken to the Capitol. And that alone is just such a bizarre scenario to even picture, but not unbelievable.
Yeah, it seems like a waste of taxpayer dollars. Jumping in and out of cars to go sightseeing and these pep rallies that you've created to disrupt the process. Really crazy stuff.
You know, I don't have it in front of me, but part of the testimony today had to do with his attacking a Secret Service agent, his own Secret Service agent. I mean, that is what we're dealing with here. That is the mentality that was at play on January 6th. This is just, I mean, there were just so many indications of crimes being committed and of just completely off the rails mentality that was in progress here. I mean, how do you look at this and say, oh, it's nothing, you know, no big deal. Something like that is, I'm speechless because I am speechless, but I'd say this is the most damning testimony ever in this country against a president, a former president, a current president, any president. This beats anything Nixon was accused of. This beats anything, even in that period of history that I don't know anything about. You know, this is, I don't know what's going to happen, but if nothing happens, that is the worst possible thing. There have to be consequences. There has to be action taken. And I sure hope Merrick Garland has it in him to do something about this. Or I don't see how we survive. I don't see how the country survives. I really don't. I've said that a lot over the past week. I don't see how the country survives because there are just so many bad things happening. And I don't mean bad just because I disagree with them. I mean bad because of the way they come about. You know? I guess we have to skip over the story that I really want to talk about this week. You know what? Let's just talk about it for a minute because it's local. Right after, the day after last week's show, we found out about something very disturbing that happened locally in Smithtown, one town over. And, you know, we were talking last week about the rising suicide rate of amongst kids in the area, and especially how gay kids, trans kids are affected more than anybody, and the hell that they sometimes have to go through and the hostility they've been facing lately on a national basis. I didn't realize at the very moment that we were talking about this, there is action being taken against this community only a few miles away at a local library trustee meeting. The Smithtown Library trustees approved the removal of Pride Month displays from the children's rooms of the library system. Now, this was painted by right-wing media and idiots as, they're just getting the pornography out. As if a library is going to have pornographic material. And to start, it's absurd. What they were removing, and this is according to a Newsday story, a history of the AIDS memorial quilt, picture books like Pink is for Boys and Pride Puppy, things that really are offensive. Oh, my God.
You know how much of my childhood I had updates on where the AIDS quilt was as it toured around the country? That was like every elementary school, everybody knew about that.
Yeah, it's not something that kids can't handle. In fact, it's something kids are curious about and ask questions about. You know, books that maybe have two dads or two moms in a story. This is the kind of thing that was removed, that was deemed unacceptable for children. Keep in mind that a lot of kids in the area have two dads or have two moms or are very familiar with, you know, gay culture or are questioning themselves how they identify. You know, they're not going out getting operations. They're at that stage in life where they're figuring it out. And instead of being condemned or intimidated, they should be listened to, talked to. And this kind of an action, where you just go in and remove material because you don't understand it, because you're afraid of it, that sends a horrible, horrible message. Now, this is all an extension of something we talked about a while back where, if you recall, there was this nationwide movement against something called critical race theory, which was basically a myth of, that was being taught in schools. Critical race theory exists. It's not taught in elementary schools. It's not even taught in high schools, as far as I know. It's a theory. It's something that people in college study. But they got so bent out of shape over this thing they didn't even understand that they were able to get parents into a panic and throughout the nation put all of these ultra-right-wing people in charge of school districts and libraries. And this is a direct result of that. Yeah. Trustee Marie Gerdenty was elected to the library board last October with the backing of Long Island Loud Majority. That's what they call it, Long Island Loud Majority. They may be loud, but they're sure not a majority. However, they were able to win an election because the rest of us aren't paying attention. Now, Long Island Loud Majority has been labeled an anti-government group by the nonprofit Southern Poverty Law Center. You might have heard of them. In fact, you probably heard about them throughout the civil rights movement. Of course, now they're being portrayed as the enemy. They're being portrayed as communists. They're being portrayed as anything that will stick to make them the bad guys. And when you have the Southern Poverty Law Center as the bad guys, you have to question what side you might be on. Anyway, she claims she's been receiving complaints about the displays for Pride Month. And, well, we found out about this.
Yeah, imagine who from.
Oh, I know who from. I mean, you know, these are people who talk to other people of like minds.
Yes, nosy gossips that have all too much time to be involved in judging what's in the public library. You know, build a private library. Yeah, go on.
Okay.
Absurd.
It is absurd, but it happened. It happened. We found out about this on Wednesday, the day after the show. Saw a copy of the memo, and this is where social media comes in handy sometimes, because we help spread the word about this on Twitter, and it spread like wildfire. It really did. David Kilnick, president of the LGBT Network of Long Island, called the Smithtown Library Board's decision an act of hate that set a dangerous precedent. The governor weighed in. People all over the country started voicing their outrage at this action, this unprovoked action that was really, really a horrible thing. Here's an example of one of the reactions to it. Florence Bracco from HOPOG has a gay son who she fully supports and is heartbroken over the library board's decision. It's saying that it's not okay to be gay, that there's something wrong with you, that we're not going to talk about you until you're older. And quoting David Kilnick here from Long Island LGBT Network, says what the Smithtown Library Board of Trustees did is a big part of the reason why so many LGBT youth attempt or commit suicide. They don't see themselves exist. They don't hear about themselves in a positive manner. And what Governor Hochul said was our public spaces should be accepting of our young people, not rejecting them. And the vote was 4-3. Well, actually, I think it was 4-2, or it was 4-3, and there was one person that wasn't there. Anyway, word got out, and they announced they were going to have an emergency meeting the next night. And it was a Zoom meeting. It was open to the public. 1,000 positions were taken almost immediately, which I think is the maximum Zoom can handle, because people were locked out at that point. And at that meeting, which was a very quick meeting, and we have the audio of it. We don't have it handy right now, but we have the audio. They reversed the decision, or at least one person reversed his decision. Another person who wasn't at the meeting voted against this stupid move. A person who had voted for it decided to abstain. So in the end, you had only two people continuing to support the removal of this material. And I believe four people voting to rescind that motion, that action. It just goes to show you, though, how close to home this kind of thing can happen. You think, you know, we're in New York, we're immune from this. No, we're not. Even if you're in New York City, you're not immune from this. This can happen anywhere. You have to watch out. You have to be careful. These are the warning signs when people like this are put into positions of power, even at a library. It can have devastating effects. Now, the reaction to this is a wake-up call. A lot of people are now interested in running for that board so that this doesn't happen again in the future. And, I'm very proud of the community for stepping forth, voicing their outrage. This is democracy in action. This is what happens when you do something that goes against public opinion. And to see that change take place that quickly, you know, it wasn't a violent mob intimidating people. It was people who were legitimately outraged by an injustice and expressing themselves and spreading the word. And the people who instigated this, they could not stand up to that. And they wisely did an about face. It doesn't mean they won't try again, though. That's why we have to be very careful who we put in positions of power. So now all we need is to have a drag queen story hour at the Smithtown Library, and I'll be happy. That's what happened here locally. Yeah, it was something. It was a bit of excitement. But soon to be upstaged by the Supreme Court, 2 days in a row. First, they basically overturned New York's concealed carry law that basically was in effect in New York City and other places in New York. And then the next day, of course, overturning Roe versus Wade. Which one do you want to talk about first, Kyle?
Well, let's go chronologically. So the first thing that came out was this concealed carry tossing out the case, basically. They ruled in favor of the complainant, the person wishing to challenge New York State's law.
Okay, well, let's do that then. I'm going to read you something from, I'm going to ask your opinion of this newspaper, by the way. The New York Daily News. What do you think about the New York Daily News?
Well, I don't know much about it, but I think it's...
I was counting on that.
Sort of comes to mind is a tabloid style. It's that style where it opens like a...
Yeah, it's a tabloid.
News magazine style.
Yeah, like a...
Weekend magazine, you know, it's like a...
We know what the Daily News looks like, yes.
Format, yeah.
Uh-huh. It's not like the New York Times.
I think
okay.
I've seen it
but
before.
What do you think about them? What's your opinion of them? Where they stand on things?
Pretty middle to conservative right. I mean, they're pretty critical, let's say.
Conservative is conservative or communist?
Critical conservatives, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say conservative. Not like the New York Post, which is just crazy.
That's like straight up, like...
Yeah. Words we can't say. But I'm going to read you something. I'm going to read you something from the editorial board. Maybe our views of the Daily News will change. The title is Shot Through the Heart. The Supreme Court Radically Expands Gun Rights, a decision that will cost lives in New York City and elsewhere. Is your opinion changing already?
Yes.
Using a garbled reading of history as a crutch, the U.S. Supreme Court's supposed textualist conservatives have just managed to codify a cartoon cutout version of the Second Amendment, obliterating New York State's century-old concealed carry firearm permitting system. We will mince no words. This will cost the lives of civilians and police officers, as almost anyone in New York City will be free to carry a gun. At a time when the proliferation of weapons is already killing record numbers of Americans, the nearly absolutist right of self-defense the majority canonizes will become a right to societal suicide. Now that's a good opening to an editorial.
That's a opening for the ages.
Uh-huh. Go on, get a subscription now. I mean, come on.
Whoa.
It's, look, this
money's
is,
tight. Money's
this
tight.
These are fighting words. Let's just read a few more. It's just 27 simple words written in 1789. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Justice Clarence Thomas, writing for the six-member majority, brazenly ignores that first clause and renders the second in the most expansive terms imaginable. With all the incisiveness of a junior high school student, he states, and I'm sorry, junior high school students, you're probably smarter than him, he states, we know of no other constitutional right that an individual may exercise only after demonstrating to government officers some special need. By this principle, there's just about no weapon that can be restricted in hardly any place, so long as a man with his finger on the trigger can credibly assert the need to protect himself. Indeed, with ever more Americans carrying ever more guns, the psychological need to carry ever more powerful weapons only escalates. Most appallingly, though the challenge was to a New York law, the majority doesn't give two shakes about the implications of its absolutism to the nation's for the nation's most populous city, which happens to be battling an upsurge in shootings due in large part to the easy availability of weapons. The word subway doesn't appear once in Thomas's 63 pages. It is left for an exasperated Justice Stephen Breyer in a dissent to ask, what about subways, nightclubs, movie theaters, and sports stadiums? The court does not say. Nor, he points out, does the majority stoop to grapple with the nature or severity of gun violence in America, gun violence that, no coincidence, is far, far less severe in states like New York, which have more restrictive permitting systems. New York's gun death rate is 5.3 per 100,000 people. Mississippi's, Louisiana's, Wyoming's are all north of 25 per 100,000, five times as much. Conservatives typically revere states' rights. Here, they obliterate them. Conservatives typically decry those who speak of a living constitution. Here, they choose one that licenses dying. At least, the majority affirms the theoretical right for localities to forbid public carriage in sensitive places. Until the next legal challenge, anyway, New York must immediately so designate subways, buses, places of worship, Times Square, Union Square, Central Park, and all other places where large numbers of people gather. How about every single street? But it'll be one thing to put up no gun signs outside subway stations and quite another for the police department to actually enforce such restrictions when even ensuring compliance with a mask mandate has been burdensome. God help us. Governor Hochul must immediately recall the legislature to redesign New York's gun safety regime, and Mayor Adams must huddle with his NYPD commissioner to develop a battle plan. The Supreme Court could render our city a free fire zone. We must fight back. And that, my friends, is today's Daily News. Well, not, it wasn't in today's Daily News, but that's the voice of the Daily News today, is what I'm trying to say.
Astonishing.
Yeah.
And that's a take. That is a take.
It surprised me. I didn't expect them to be that enlightened, but they are, and it's good to hear that. And New Yorkers are angry. They really are. I think something like 15% of the people wanted this. It's insane. It's insane to just see the things that the people want just cast away. And already, Hochul legislature, they are working out agreements. I understand they're nearing an agreement to amend the concealed carry law. Won't get into the details because we will run out of time if I do. But there's hope. You know, if we fight back, there's always hope. Now, the day after this happened, of course, what we all heard about, the overturning of Roe versus Wade. What do you think, Kyle?
They do this in the summer, so because no one's paying attention.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's when the term is. But
everybody's on vacation.
Look, one day you say, no, states, you can't regulate this.
Yeah, and then...
And then the next day it's, no, states are the only ones who can regulate this. How do you live with yourself with that kind of hypocrisy where you say one thing one day to suit your political agenda, next day say the complete opposite to suit the same political agenda? It's so insane and crazy. And that's the reality we live in right now. So, and it was a vote of 5-4. I thought the vote was more than that. It was only 5-4. One justice would have made the difference, which means that the stolen seat alone of Trump's did this. You know, when they wouldn't let Obama have a nominee during the last year of his presidency, And then they let Trump have one in the last month of his? Yeah, that's what happens. The fact that he picked three different justices, this is what happens. So yeah, now everything that we've been warning about, everything that liberals have been blamed for overreacting, it's come true. It's happened. Roe versus Wade, dead. And we have not yet seen the effects this is going to be having on our society, on our people. But it's going to be horrendous. And I have to say, you know...
Who's going to take care of all the babies?
That's a good question.
Are we going to build schools?
You know, like so many people have said, you know, Republicans don't really care about the kids after they're born. They care about them before they're born. After that, they just walk away. So, yeah, expect a lot of lives destroyed. Existing lives and future lives.
The type of people that really support this also believe firmly that children born of sexual assault and incest should be taken to term in every case. That's not a, like, a light sort of middle-of-the-road perspective. That's what they believe personally, and they're considering it moral and accurate or correct scientifically to fit their moral ideal, without really considering that other people don't really see that as moral the long run. They don't agree with that.
That's fine. They can have their moral code. And, you know, this is what I think a lot of people, we saw something on Vice a couple of weeks ago, where a bunch of kids were brought together from different backgrounds, some of whom were vehemently opposed to abortion, some of whom were very pro-choice. And what they found, especially with the kids who were opposed to abortion, was that they somehow hadn't worked out. They didn't realize that the other people that they were supposedly opposed to weren't necessarily pro-abortion. They simply believed that everybody should have a choice. And, you know, the choice that they make might very well be the same choice that the anti-abortion people make. But they wanted to make the choice. And it was just this aha moment that a lot of the kids felt. That, okay, we didn't realize that it was just a question of, you know, you wanting the ability to make a choice for yourself. And hopefully you'll make the same choice I make, but it should be your choice. And I think most people believe that. Most people think, yeah, you know, it's a sucky situation. And, you know, these are the options. But in the end, your body, your decision. That's all it is. And now we have a situation where a minority, a small minority, is basically pushing their will onto everybody. It's like the Taliban. It really is a lot like the Taliban, where women are being victimized and they have no say, and they're being intimidated and threatened. I've seen some of the most vile threats being made by elected officials against women over the past week. For instance, if you live in a state where abortion is illegal and you travel to another state to get an abortion, you're going to be arrested. You're going to be charged with a crime. They're treating them like they're prisoners, of some, you know, some horrible place that they're not allowed to leave. They're not allowed to act like free people. No, you're a citizen of Missouri, and you have to abide by the rules that we say you have to abide by, and you can't go anywhere else and live by their rules. No, you're our property. It's literally how people are talking now. It's sickening, and I know, you know, I'm aware that countries have customs where your citizens, if they travel to a country and do something illegal, such as, you know, ingest some kind of drug that's not legal in your country, or engage in sexual activity that's not legal in your country, you can be in trouble as a citizen of that country. We're not talking about countries. We're talking about states. You know, states are not countries. You don't need a passport to go from one to the other, although you might someday soon. How are they going to enforce this? How are they going to keep track of people? How are they going to know who's pregnant, who isn't, who's no longer pregnant, who's out of the state? there's going to be all kinds of surveillance here that, you know, it's just, it's unfathomable to me how they're going to do this. But I don't doubt for a second that they're going to try.
That's been really clear. The whole, medication and whether it's sent in the mail, is that federal or private carriers, you know, how that's going to work out is going to be really important, let alone people ferrying it themselves across state lines and trying to help. But one thing I was noticing in this whole thing is that the whole tone of it, the forbidding of travel itself is it's a part of this attitude of you're on your own. And I think that this is going to really affect those especially younger people who aren't prepared to have a family, who are find themselves pregnant and have no support whatsoever. Mm-hmm. They have these crisis care clinics and stuff they're really trying to push people into. And I just noticed, much like, I hate to make the parallel, but much like what's going on in Ukraine, we're kind of on the back feet, and I think, back foot, I think that really a lot of this technological, like, preventive stuff and law should have been put in place. There was probably too heavy of a reliance on Roe in light of how this went politically.
Mm-hmm.
But not to say that it wasn't ill-got and kind of messed up in the court stacking and stuff like that. But I just feel like there should have been a lot more preparation. The fact that we're, like, having to consider what apps and you know, tech things and privacy implications this all has after the fact is insane.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this, people should have been protected before this. None of this, we shouldn't have to be, like, reacting to all of this. There should have been many more layers instead of just this over-reliance on something.
No, I'm with you there. It seems like we're always reacting instead of doing things that the other side has to react to. I mean, the other side reacts to things, but they're fantasy. They're you know, radical communist agendas that they seem to think. It's very similar to what you hear in Russia now when talking about Ukraine. Ukraine is a very interesting parallel. We just saw a piece a couple of days ago about how people in Russia are believing the government line. Even people whose kids are being killed in Ukraine are believing that somehow Ukraine is a threat to Russia, that they are killing Russians in Russia, and that they're filled with Nazis. You know, all kinds of nonsense like this, things that are easily proved to be false. But when your government and when your social media is telling you that these are the facts, even though there's absolutely nothing to back them up, it's very, very hard to get them to change their mind. And you realize facts really don't help at that point. And I see the parallel with a lot of the Trump people where, here's the evidence. Look, it's right here. Nope, didn't really happen. That's fake. And how do you get past that?
And the other side's so derided that the alternative is repulsive. So why would you even listen to the other side, or anything other than the propaganda? Because the propaganda has told you the other side is so awful and so detestable and counter to what you should and should not believe.
And it's always easy to find somebody who is reprehensible who is on your side. Or the other side can do that very easily. They can find someone that's saying the same things, but they're saying it in a terrible way, or they're filled with hatred or racism or something like that. You can always find somebody on any side to do that. Doesn't represent the actual opinions of people. And that's something that that we need to be very wary of when people are being fed this propaganda.
I really also just wanted to speak to the relationships and what people go through when they're faced with finding out they're pregnant. This is going to affect a lot of young guys too.
That's right. Now, people don't talk about this, but especially in colleges.
I think it's interesting too, because we don't support our schools and we want less sex education, and then we bully anybody who doesn't get along with all of the sort of guys' attitudes, right? So then you're thrust into being unaware of safe sex and unaware of any other way of being, and the kinds of pressures and stereotypical relationships that you learn about through TV and lack of representation of other ways of being, I think can create a really perilous recipe for people that are not prepared for adulthood and like what it means to have a family and stuff. And I like things change when your partner becomes pregnant. Mm-hmm. Many guys run off. The pheromones, everything's changing, and your interests, if you're not prepared for that, if you're in a situation where your family is not supportive or incredibly critical of you mm-hmm. already, and you've been making poor choices, you know, there are a myriad of things that affect the men on the side of this that are not just going to go through carefree. They're now quite responsible.
Well, they're responsible, so. But are they legally responsible? I didn't see anything in the Supreme Court ruling saying that the fathers of these now unwanted pregnancies are required to drop whatever it is they're doing and support their kid. I didn't see that anywhere. So you know, it must be coming, right? That's going down the road. It's the thing that is never talked about. And as you said, they can run, and they do run many times.
It's single mothers is not a unfamiliar thing. Like that is a concept we're familiar with in society. So I just wonder, as we're reacting and critical of our own reacting, being grown enough, I've witnessed a lot of different situations and stories and stuff, and I think that the implications of this, we don't even understand. It's really a huge disservice to a lot of people going forward.
And it's not stopping there. The court, specifically Clarence Thomas, indicating that they intend to go after contraception. Birth control, is it mandatory to have children now? Is that what they're going to do? They're going to make it so you can't not have a kid under any situation. Contraception will be, you won't be able to get access to contraception.
They just confiscate everybody's reproductive organs.
Now, does that include condoms, or is it only female contraception that they're attacking here? I think
it does, all forms, right? Contraception is contraception.
I don't know, you would think, but I think they're only targeting female contraception. I haven't heard much in the way of details here.
Does that mean the rhythm method is outlawed?
I'd have to talk to some really far-right politicians and lawmakers, and it's just too disgusting and horrible to realize that these people have the future of so many in their hands. But, again, it doesn't stop there. They intend to go after gay marriage, gay rights. And, you know, who knows, eventually civil rights, probably. Here's the thing. I mentioned Clarence Thomas. He basically is the decider here. Somehow, he has all this power. And he is the one saying that, they're gonna just undo a lot of the rights that we have now. This has never happened before. Constitutional rights have never been taken away before. And now they have. And they've tasted blood, and now they're going to keep going, or at least now he's going to keep going. This guy is a problem. This guy has lost his mind. He's got a maniac of a wife that participated in the January 6th insurrection. The Supreme Court is no longer valid. It really is not, and I don't feel good saying that, but look at how it has come about. It's turned into a political organization. Three of the justices, put in place by Trump. And here's another thing. We always are extolling the virtues of our system. You know, we have the three types of government. We've got the judicial, and we've got the executive, and we've got the... what's the third one? God damn it, I knew I'd forget this. Congressional. Legislative. Thank you. Okay, so you got your executive, legislative, and judicial.
All right, you're a citizen.
They're all independent, right? Isn't that right?
Well, in theory, yes.
In theory. But look at the judicial. look at how that comes about. Now, you know, the president, yeah, we elect the president, even though we really don't, because it's not done by popular vote.
Don't get me started.
The legislative, we elect them, but, you know, that's not really true either because of gerrymandering.
Just stop.
Okay, no, judicial, though. I'm going to focus on judicial this.
No, I don't respect them anymore either.
Yeah. They are appointed by the executive, by the president. They are voted on by the Senate, by the legislative. They're not independent. They're a tool of those other two bodies. And right now, we're seeing that more than anything. This is not something that is independent. It is just another arm that the minority is using. It's not valid anymore.
I think that's true in that if it looks sick and it is developed by those two other branches,
mm-hmm.
that is a big red flag about the well-being of those other branches.
Yeah.
Or at least what it has been, if it's changed at all.
Now, you know, we've seen uprisings in many parts of the world, and we saw an attempted one on January 6th. Now, the reason that January 6th leaves such a bad taste with everybody is because the premise was flawed. It was basically a bunch of lies, a bunch of easily provable lies. The election was not stolen. The transfer of power had every right to go forward, and what these people were doing was 100% wrong. But here's my question. What happens if they weren't wrong? You know, what happens if an election was actually being stolen? What happens if you have, like, a Ferdinand Marcos-type situation, you know, or any one of a number of dictators that we've seen over the decades? Do the people have a right to rise up and start trashing the place and burning buildings? Because, you know, in other parts of the world, we say, yeah, you know, it's about time. That if that happened right now in Moscow, We'd be thrilled. We'd be thrilled to see people rising up and saying enough already. I think we are moving in that direction because there are so many things that you can point to now that simply are not valid anymore. There are basically all these institutions that don't reflect the will of the majority. The minority finds a way to get power even though they lost. We're seeing it over and over and over again. And at some point, people will say they've had enough of this. You know, we're the majority. When does our voice count? It doesn't count in the Senate. It doesn't count in the presidency. It doesn't count in the Supreme Court. We have to live under these crazy rules and laws from centuries ago because this small minority of people wants it that way? Uh-uh. No. How do you make a Molotov cocktail? Let's do the research. We're going down that road. It's not a road I want to go down, but it might be an inevitable road. Or, you know, we can just vote all the bastards out in November. But yeah. to do that, we have to believe we have the power. We have to believe in that system at least one more time. With all the gerrymandering, I don't know. But it doesn't help to say that Democrats are no different because they are different. Are they doing everything perfectly? No, by no means. I don't think they're nearly as loud and abrasive as they have to be. But they're all we got right now. They're all we have. And if that doesn't work, then I think we're doomed to walk down that dark road.
Yeah, it becomes the alternative. That's why, as boring and dry as it is, it always comes back to voting and participating. I have receipts. I have contempt. I have resentment. It has my entire life. Everything I was told about how this system works functionally has been a pretty big lie, as I've seen. The trajectory, where it's landed,
mm-hmm.
how many wars, how many whatever, the greed, the insanity, the schizophrenia of what we've developed in this country is something I have the utmost scorn for. And I can't ever let go of that. And I won't. But the way I'll act will be in as graceful and honest and dignified a way any citizen could behave in the face of it. And I hope everyone else behaves that way, and I expect it from them.
And support each other. I mean, we have a lot to disagree with, but now's not the time to disagree on things that can wait. You know, there are too many things that we agree on that we need to unite and fight and take things back. I mean, that's really what counts here. So many things ahead, and it's depressing. It's depressing, but it's also a bit inspiring. You know, if we raise our voices and unite and do something, you know, what happened in Smithtown, that was democracy in action. Something horrible happened. We raised our voices. We showed unity. It went away within a day. We need to do the same thing on a much bigger scale. But also, we need to do that, you know, constantly for all the things that are happening on a daily basis. This is something we'll be talking about for quite some time, something we'll be hearing lots about here on WUSB. We're going to be actively working to help people in less fortunate areas. I foresee some kind of an app or a website where basically people click where they are and get options on how they can be helped for cheap or for nothing. And we all have an obligation to try and help those people and not listen to the idiots who threaten us, because we don't like bullies. Not now, not ever. Write to us, otw@2600.com. And here is a public service announcement from the Supreme Court. Good night.
There are Jews in the world. There are Buddhists. There are Hindus and Mormons and them. There are those that follow Mohammed's bush. I've never been one of them. I'm a Roman Catholic, and have been since before I was born. And the one thing they say about Catholics is they'll take you as soon as you're warm. You don't have to be a six-footer. You don't have to have a great brain. You don't have to have any clothes on. You're a Catholic the moment that came. Because every sperm is sacred, every sperm is great. If a sperm is wasted, God gets quite irate.